Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Hope you're doing well in this beautiful fall weather.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you. And a quick shout out to Corey, who listens to the show.
So. And I feel like we are going to get into a topic that Nelson wrote to us about as we discuss maps. So thanks for the emails. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we love the engagement, everyone. And let's go global first and talk about this amazing ad that I think it was the province of Ontario put out on tariffs, where they basically show Ronald Reagan giving a speech, recording a speech. They actually show him holding his papers, you know, speaking into a microphone where he...
They clearly think Reagan still matters.
Yeah, for sure. 30 some odd years ago, he was in office. But his argument for why open markets are the right way to go, and in typical Reagan fashion, he does it with a lot of precision. And, you know, there's this saying about Reagan that he wasn't a great communicator. He communicated great ideas. And I think this is a great idea, meaning that Ontario latched onto. And boy, did it get the president of this country upset. Shireen, John?
It sure did, yeah. So basically now we're in another, I would just say, rage-induced fight over tariffs because our president seems to have a hard time with negative feedback. So now he's saying, I believe we've ceased trade negotiations with Canada right now. And I just have to add, like, Canada and Mexico are our biggest trade partners in large part, right? Because they're on our borders. Yeah, proximity. So this is bad for Americans. And just, again, a reminder that tariffs are a tax that we pay, right? That American consumers pay on goods that are imported.
What?
I know.
John, you make the point that, you know, does Reagan really matter anymore? Well, and I'm sort of like, the ideas still matter.
I jokingly say that because ran, you know, for Congress a year and a half ago, I can't tell you how many Republicans acted like, yeah, Reagan doesn't matter anymore. Reagan's done. Why are you talking about Reagan? Because I'm a fan of Reagan. I'm a fan of the principles he talked about. Uh-huh. I will note that there is a little messiness in the Reagan legacy about tariffs and trade, especially with Japan back then, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. But largely, he was a free trade president, even though there were some weaknesses there.
Yeah. Well, I encourage
people. Trump's
in
denial that, oh, well, Reagan didn't believe that and Reagan didn't say that. And, you know, this is an AI generated. And that's a bunch of bunk as well.
He's calling it fake.
Oh, yeah.
All caps, fake. I will also say that I just encourage our listeners to go listen to it.
Yeah.
Don't even think it's Ronald Reagan. Just listen to the argument he spells out and see if it makes sense to you.
Well, I'll just add that I'm noticing we're seeing more local businesses close. And one of the things that they're citing are increased cost of goods. I'm sad to see Chubby Baker announce that they're closing all of their locations. Current and Undercurrent downtown are closing as well. And one of the things that they're specifically citing is just the increased cost of goods and the instability.
The instability is a big thing.
It's huge.
I can't plan. I can't predict.
And then you had the new CPI consumer price index report come out last week, and it ticked up again.
Yeah.
So we have inflation in this country now at 3%. It was 2.9. Now it's jumped to 3. And
fake news. That's it's over. Come
well,
on,
and
Natalie.
What's interesting about it is we wouldn't even know that because the government shut down. But they made an exception for this one report. This is the last one
we'll get. It's still shut down? Has anybody noticed?
Well, let's talk about it. We're 4 weeks in, you two.
Yeah.
Is there an end in sight?
No, not right now.
Shireen?
On both sides of the Congress, you know, House, Senate, Republican, Democrat, I think they're all just posturing. And from their perspective, they don't really care that it's shut down.
Yeah. And I do think that there's a real reason that Speaker Johnson doesn't want to swear in this representative from Arizona. I do think that she's going to sign on to release the Epstein files, and he doesn't want that either. I mean, I genuinely think that's happening. So there are a number of reasons that I believe this continues. But I'll just say I'm thinking desperately about about 100,000, I think, plus about 4%, just shy of 5% of Utah's population that are on SNAP, on food benefits. And they're going to see those discontinued discontinued as of November 1st. That's painful if people are able to support their local food banks, to find ways to give back in their communities. This is absolutely the time to do it. But I'll just tell you, I'm looking at states like Louisiana, Alabama, Florida, where we're talking 10, 12, 18% of the population who are on food assistance in this country. Those folks are about to have a very difficult November, and this needs to stop.
Well, and we'll feed into the midterm elections.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, those states...
Well, the midterm elections aren't going to be till next year. And so, you know, I'm going to say that people are going to forget. They're not going to remember. It's not going to matter. At least it's not going to matter in a large number. And this is where Shereen and I might disagree a little bit. I don't see food stamps being a federal issue. And I think if it were a state issue, we would not be talking about this because the states wouldn't be shut down. They'd be operating. Whatever assistance needs to happen would be provided. And this is part of the problem of the overdependence on the federal government that's utterly dysfunctional. And I think I wish we would wake up and say, we're trying to get it to do too much on too many fronts, and we need to just stop.
Yeah. I just have to say the thing that I take issue with is when you say the food that would be needed would be provided. That would be a question to the states. And I think if we look at Utah, it would be very questionable if the hungry people or states like Louisiana, where we're talking about almost 20% of the population relying on this, is a state like Louisiana really going to fund food? I don't think that they will. And honestly, I wouldn't trust that this state would either.
Interesting. My point on midterms.
And yet you're willing to trust a federal government that's dysfunctional. They can't do it. So therefore, you know. We sit in this situation.
Yeah. My point on the midterms, realizing that it's still a ways out, but the chaos builds. My point is that this doesn't, you don't have it and then people forget about it. It accelerates. It compounds.
Yeah.
And it's been compounding for a while and this adds to it. Interesting. Okay. Well, we also have the White House East Wing now gone.
Well, before you shift, okay. I mean, I want to flag one other thing when it comes to the federal shutdown that I have serious problems with.
Yeah.
You know, we've got this one individual who donated to fund the troops for some period of time. And I come from the old school perspective, which is, okay, money coming in should be appropriated by Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The president shouldn't be able to take donations and then funnel it over to this program or that program to minimize the effects of the shutdown. Money should come to Congress. Congress should appropriate it. And so therefore, some of the things that the Republican congressmen and women are looking the other way as the president engages in certain behavior to minimize some of the impacts.
But John, this
is
a nice.
I have concerns with that.
Like bombing ships that they are saying narco drug traffickers out of the ocean without absolutely any oversight from Congress.
Well, that's not a shutdown thing, but that gets into where the lines of this is not a defensive act of war in my mind. This is an active sense, and only Congress is supposed to have the authority to declare war.
Sure. I just will say I have called my congressman numerous times on this, and I encourage all of our listeners to do so, because when you ask them, for these folks who I feel like run around, especially people like Mike Lee, and shove the Constitution in my face and tell us all, you know, how important that document is, that it seems to be shredded and they do not care.
Mm. Well, and this is where, you know, Natalie, I did watch a little bit of the Sunday morning news programs this past weekend. And this is where I'm sitting there shaking my head going, okay, they're willing to have the, you know, these congressmen and women willing to have the president engage in this, that, and the other. And I look and go, well, that's supposed to be a decision of Congress, not the president.
We very much agree, John.
You know, and they were talking about TikTok.
Yeah.
And it was like, but the president isn't following the law about TikTok.
No.
I mean, maybe it's following the general guides of where you wanted it to go, but it definitely is not following the law.
So there's a nice sort of pivot here about, you know, you mentioning the funding of the military by a private donor. How about the funding of a public facility, meaning the People's House.
The ballroom.
Yeah, in this case, the East Wing of the White House, 90,000 square feet. We've got donors like Amazon, Apple,
Microsoft. Did you expect how fast
that
was going to get torn down?
What a bad image.
Yeah.
While the government shut down.
Is it a bad image or is it the exact image that captures what this administration is like?
You mean he didn't mind it?
He doesn't care.
Well, I sit there and I wish we would get rid of all the federal rules and regulations and allow other construction projects across the nation to move.
Maybe
at
like
the
affordable
speed
housing.
Of the ballroom.
I'm with you. I mean, interestingly, you know, I know the White House to be dated. I know the White House to be, you know, very historical and all of that. But it's also, I could see it needing improvements. It's just you do have to follow a process. I mean, I just.
Whether or not you need to follow a certain process. I think, Natalie, you come from the perspective which is keep folks informed so they understand or you're moving along. You know, when you hear we're not going to affect the White House, this is going to be an outbuilding, and then all of a sudden they're seeing, quote unquote, parts of the White House being torn down so quickly.
Yeah.
You got to help bring people along.
I'll just say eggs are up, I believe, 154%. And those are the kinds of costs that we are facing every day. This president has said this ballroom is his top priority.
Eggs are up. Eggs are down, significantly down from what they used to be.
Nationwide eggs are up.
Really? I mean, they're more expensive than they were 2-3 years ago, but they're down from what they were just, you know, a year ago.
Yeah. Shifting a little bit to the economy, I saw this report in the New York Times about Amazon replacing more than 500,000 jobs with robots. This is at the same time that we're starting to see some layoffs locally, some of size. You know, kind of the rule of thumb right now in the economy is that people are not hiring but not firing either. They're just holding, you know, court. But it feels like the economy's starting to sink a little bit. You too? What are you seeing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do believe for all the frustrations I have, Utah continues to be in a stronger position, but not as strong as it has been. And then we're seeing a number of states, I believe about half the states, are at or about to be in a recession.
I think the key thing is uncertainty. You know, whether it is or isn't, there's a lot of uncertainty about, am I going to get impacted? Am I going to be feeling the pressure? You know, what's going to happen to my job? And so it's that uncertainty.
Yeah. I will just add that there's these headwinds, that the tariff, the uncertainty, even the border policies are raising prices by making labor more expensive, these sorts of things. But there's also an AI boom going on, and it's affecting the stock market. It's creating a wealth effect, and there's a lot of money out there.
Yeah.
So those two forces are like hitting a draw. And we'll see what the future holds. Okay, we got some other great news to talk about in the second segment. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Loving this weather, you two. What a beautiful fall it is in
fall.
Utah. Yeah.
A little bit of rain, leaves changing color.
Yeah.
Temps, you know, highs of 50s and 60s.
Every once in a while, the snow, you know, kisses the tops of the mountains, and it's great. But I'm using the word great too much because I'm talking, I ended the last segment by saying we got lots of great news to talk about in the second segment.
And Shireen and I looked at each other.
You giggled and said,
that last
great.
Segment was really great.
Maybe it's just that my mother was an optimist and she instilled it in me. But let's go. I'm intrigued by this Judge Gibson, who is on point to help with these redistricting maps. I don't know.
What do you mean by help with these redistricting
maps?
Okay,
make decisions. Yeah, make decisions. Set the standards.
The legislature would have the concern, which is she's overstepped and made attempts to overstep.
Yeah, part of my point, I don't know this judge, anything about her, but wow, what power she's wielding right now.
Yeah.
And also, what pressure she must be under.
Yeah.
And she's got till
November 10th is when the LG says, I need the maps.
Right around the corner.
I need the maps because we've got to get it out to the counties. The counties have to draw things. So come January 2nd, we're good to go with the upcoming election cycle.
Good on the LG for setting a deadline because we have to decide this issue. But let's talk about this a little bit. So we had the legislature's main expert witness. And basically said, hey, you know, this map C, it does favor the GOP. But that doesn't mean that Democrats can't win a House seat or two. And, you know, that sounds like about what redistricting is like to me. If you're in charge and you're Republicans and you're given broad discretion on how you draw these maps, I'm okay that it favors Republicans. You too? Give me.
I mean, I just have to ask, are you really? Because wouldn't you prefer a system in which the maps were fair? Whatever that looks like, and we can talk about what the testimony on the other side suggested. But when I think about, I mean, fundamentally, I think our government would be better if we had more maps that were drawn fairly and more competitive districts and people were forced to work together.
What do you mean by fair?
That's what gets
weird.
What do you mean by fair? That's what gets weird because fair, Shireen, is really a big, big, broad line.
Yeah.
There's a lot of movement within fair.
I mean, please give us four seats.
What this expert is saying is that there's people you could run and you could even have half the delegation.
Okay. So I'll say this stood out to me. So the expert witness for the GOP kind of, I would say, takeaway comment was, if we go with these maps, somebody like Ben McAdams or Evan McMullen could win two. They could have half the delegation. Okay. If you look at the expert witnesses for fair maps, so for anti-gerrymandering, let's just say that, What they said is, we used an algorithm. We used an unbiased tool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are lots of arguments about the ways in which algorithms can be biased. But we use these tools to make computer-generated maps. And in 10,000 maps, over 99% of those did create one district that favored or gave an opportunity for Democrats. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is, if we use the tools available to us to take away human bias out of this process, it creates an environment.
Oh, no, no. What they said is, we coded it for the bias that was passed in the initiative.
Okay, but
to say that it's unbiased would be...
What was that bias? What were they asking for?
Well, really, at the end of the day, what the initiative was pushing for was for Democrats to get a seat.
What it was saying is that
politicians
shouldn't pick their voters. Politicians shouldn't pick their voters. The voters should be able to pick them.
But the Constitution puts politicians as drawing the maps. At the end of the day, from my perspective, as I look at the Constitution, it is about the politicians, our state representatives and our state senators drawing the maps.
Independents and Democrats in the state are disenfranchised, and they are disenfranchised over and over again by this legislature. And what they were saying is, communities of interest should be kept together. The counties shouldn't be divided as more than is necessary for a count, right? These are really reasonable. I mean, I just have to say, John, I understand that you're upset about this, but the way that you're reacting
I'm not suggesting. Upset. What I am saying is, this notion of fairness is foolish, because what was happening was a certain set of rules were put in place, and those were not fair.
In typical.
They were desirable for one set of voters, but not for another. And so this whole notion of fairness just doesn't work.
In typical fashion for me, you know, I think there's unfair and fair. And so I don't think that, you know, you can totally discount fair. I think breaking up Salt Lake City into four pieces.
Mill Creek, technically.
Mill Creek into four pieces, that's odd.
Does that seem fair?
You know, I think breaking Salt Lake County into two, that seems okay.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, and so what I'm looking for is I'm just saying
it's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, well, is it really?
Is in the eye of the beholder.
Is it really, John?
Because
there are communities of interest.
Yes.
There are communities of interest.
Algorithms are not fair. Algorithms are coded to do one thing or another thing.
But John, and if I say to the algorithm, I want to keep municipalities whole because they're a community of interest, because they have, in my case, a school district, a park system, a power
district.
A power company and whatnot. I want to keep Murray City whole. I don't think that as unfair. I think that is just a logical way to proceed, that you keep.
As a resident of Murray, you think that's fair. And others may think that's not fair.
No, but your point is that fair is subjective. But
yes.
But I'm saying that communities of interest, you can define.
Actually, communities of interest is quite hard, because you just talked about cities and county boundaries are easy to see when you're drawing maps.
Uh-huh.
But others will say school boundaries or church congregations or other things like that.
Yeah.
And those boundaries aren't there when you're drawing maps.
I'm ready to go on church congregations.
I think there's
the way people organize here. Let's do it.
I think there's a hierarchy of you know, what makes sense and like I said, fair is a big, you know, subjective thing. But there's rules that we can follow. And it'd be like saying it's unfair that Wyoming has two senators. That's unfair.
But and many folks say that.
I know, but we made a rule. And we live by it. And so I think it's okay for a state to make some rules that elected officials have to abide by. And you can do that through an initiative process and whatnot. So,
but you can have rules that are unfair. And you can still agree to those that are unfair. I'm just saying, there are people that say Wyoming shouldn't have two senators.
So I guess getting back to this judge, I think I agree with you that this is an amazing amount of I just am grateful for how I do feel deliberate, slow, thoughtful this process has been. There have been, I think, lots of opportunities for both sides to make their arguments. I'll just say one argument seems to be explicitly partisan and the other argument seems to be around process. But I don't know. I'm curious to see how this comes together. And I would be really interested to understand why. I guess I would just love to hear an explanation from this legislature that is Republican supermajority about why this process is so terrifying to them, why they are willing to put in so much money to stop this.
Let's do it. Let's do predictions here. You know, 10,000 maps she's got that she could potentially look at, even more. She's got some that are, this is the judge that
three are, submitted,
you know, that are like of senior appeal. I'm going to bet that she goes with MAPC. and says it's just fine. John?
Well, she can't go with the other maps. So all her only choice, from my perspective, is adopt map C or toss map C until the legislature try again.
Yeah. And
I think C is livable. I really do.
Okay. Well, then we just did it, you guys. We have this big heated discussion, but we're basically saying, hey, the legislature, it's their responsibility. They have this responsibility. Mm-hmm. And they made something that was better.
Yeah.
Because they kept communities of interest to my standard. And maybe the judge will see that. More closely aligned to it.
More closely.
What about just briefly?
But to Shireen's point, why does the legislature care? Because from the legislative perspective,
why are they afraid?
Why are they afraid? Okay. To me, why do they care? It's because they're protecting their constitutional authority, and which is something the founders of our nation talked about, you know, checks and balances and power, checking power, and diligently, vigilantly guarding your power, your constitutional power.
Yeah.
So that is what the legislature is doing.
They believe a real hard time.
They believe they are the ones to be drawing the boundaries.
Yeah.
And so that's why they are so fearful, to use your word.
Yeah.
It's because they are vigilantly protecting what they believe is their constitutional authority.
When it keeps them in power. I am really having a hard time. And again, not from you, because I do love and appreciate you. But from Republicans, I'm having a real hard time hearing anybody talk to me about constitutional authority these days in that party.
Yeah. Okay. Not to make this soup even more of a complicated flavor profile, but we did have the legislature.
It's a little sour.
What else is on the
today?
We had the Utah GOP abandon, I guess, their indirect initiative.
Or pivot, but yeah.
Proposal.
Yeah.
This is complicated. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, they had an initiative that they were going to put in front of a certain set of voters. I mean, voters to sign.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to have as high of a threshold to clear that. And then they were going to put it to the legislature to vote. And that would have, you know, in essence, repealed Prop 4, mm-hmm. which is the proposition that dealt with mm-hmm. the rules for drawing boundaries. Okay. So they've pivoted and they're going out to it where they're going to require more signatures and then put it in front of the voters to vote.
Yeah. And my read of that is that they didn't want to have the dirty hands of actually being the ones that placed the vote that overrode the 2018 law. But, John, your point is it just...
Rumblings that I was hearing was there were some questions, because timing. These have to go through the lieutenant governor and the timing of it. And
she might not allow the indirect.
Since the supporters of this new initiative believe they can pass it either way. Fine, let's put it to the voters. They feel like it barely passed the first time, that they've got the votes to get it overturned.
Shireen, did you see Brian King's quote on this?
Sure.
Would you like to read it to the group? It's sort of interesting.
I mean, the part that we have in front of us eliminates the part about it being embarrassing, which I do think it is. But he went on to say the Utah Republican Party may continue to try to ignore the will of the voters next year using other tricks. But Utahns will continue to see through the corruption, abuse of power, and overall disrespect. And I think that is the part that feels so real to me. It just feels like there is this disdain that some in Republican leadership honestly have for us as voters, not just Democrats, just us in general. And I feel like that there's a real sense of we don't like what the courts are doing, so we're going to change the courts. We don't like what the people are doing, so we're going to make it more difficult. It just feels like this unbelievable death grip on maybe a Utah, a little bit of the past. And perhaps new leadership would help us maybe
think about where we're going. Perspective. You know, if you had a referendum or initiative that passed, when I was a legislator, I didn't really care what the vote was statewide. I looked at what was the vote in my district, because that's who I felt like I was representing. So I felt no qualms pushing back against an initiative that my constituents did not support. They voted against it. They didn't have enough votes to vote mm-hmm. for it. So I had no qualms
I've heard other
pushing
Republicans
back against
say
this. That.
Yeah. Well, I got to say that I have confidence in our legislature to do the right thing ultimately. So there can be a lot of sausage getting to the right point, but I think we'll get there. One last topic, Senator Daniel Thatcher.
Yeah.
This is a guy that was elected as a Republican, then changed parties to the Utah Forward Party, if I have that right.
Yeah.
Now he's going to leave the legislature. How does this work? What happens next? Does he get reappointed as a Republican or as a Utah Forward?
Historically, the party would hold a special election to nominate
delegates,
somebody to go to the governor for appointment to fill out that term or part of that term. So now the question that really is going to be before us is Senator Thatcher was elected under the Republican Party and then changed parties. And so Some folks are saying it's the Republican Party that should pick his replacement. Others are saying the For Utah Party should pick his replacement. Yeah. I think we will hear a lot of debate and discussion over what that really means, because I think this is the first time we've ever hit this situation.
Yeah, Shireen, if I have it right, there's only 2,100 registered members of the Utah Forward Party.
Statewide.
Interesting if those 2,100 got to pick a state senator.
I mean, I think it's kind of unusual, and I don't love that just a handful of delegates get to pick in either party when this happens. I think it's actually, it would be good for us to relook at this whole process and just take it to the voters of that district.
Yeah. And part of the thing why I didn't go to the voters is to expedite it.
Yeah, no,
it takes a certain period to do an election. And rather than hanging it open for an extended period of time, this was a quick way of getting a replacement to fill a seat.
Yeah, I think we've seen some of our most partisan individuals, some of our furthest afield to the right, be appointed.
I used a soup metaphor earlier. Everything's boiling, you guys. Everything's boiling.
Well, and I would say a lot of the women in the Republican Party came in a midterm appointment.
Yeah. This is Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everyone.